I'd like to call the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Division to order. The clerk will note the roll. We do have a quorum. Would someone entertain moving the minutes for February 15th and February 20th?
Mr. Chair, I move the minutes for the 15th of... I move approval of the minutes.
Representative Severson moved the minutes. Any questions or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The minutes are approved. Today we have a few referrals prior to our taking our bills, our subcommittee reports. And the reason, again, I'd just like to reiterate the fact that we have the referrals is the fact that we're trying to save time and not have duplicate presentations in both committees. So we appreciate that. Technically, if there's a subcommittee report and you have a question on the bill, we do have the authors here so you can raise some questions and we could review it. But if there are no questions, then we could move with subcommittee reports.
We adopt that report if there's no further discussion about it or questions of the author.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. And for the committee members, there are actually three votes, basically, so you're going to think it's repetition. And it is, I mean, to that extent. But we have to move the report, we have to adopt the report, and then we have to pass it to the full committee. So what we're doing here is supposedly correct, and we aren't, you know, out of sync. But, so Representative Hornstein has moved the subcommittee report. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The subcommittee report is moved, I suppose you could say. The motion's been accepted. And
so I guess then the second motion would be to adopt the subcommittee report.
Any questions from the committee members?
Mr. Chair, I guess this would be the time to question Representative.
There's some questions on the, that's House File 667, Major Highway Projects Annual Report Filing. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal note on this?
We had a fiscal note, didn't
we? We do.
Excuse me, just a minute. We do have a fiscal note, but just a minute, please. Is it in the packet? No, there. It isn't in your packet, apparently, but we can make some copies. The total, in this one, it says the total cost of the state is $13,000, not million.
And, Mr. Chair, is that from the Trunk Highway Fund, then?
That would be from the Trunk Highway Fund. That's correct. That's what it is.
And then just procedurally, then, is this something that would be your intent to hold over for an omnibus bill, or are you just intending to move this out?
Representative Holbrook, we had two alternatives, and the Finance Committee wanted to hear it and wanted to get the Ways and Means, and if that happens, they either want to have it there or they're going to move it back. And that's what the situation is now.
Okay.
It may go in its own or may be rolled into the question you're asking may be included in the division bill when we finish.
Okay.
Do you want a copy of the fiscal report?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's not necessary today, but I would like in the future, if there are bills that have fiscal impact, that the fiscal note be included in the packet. That would be helpful.
Right. Representative Holbrook, I'm sorry we didn't have it in there. I didn't recognize. A lot of times we just get these at the last minute and I kind of forgot.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But basically it was a fiscal, from Trunk Highway Funds, a total cost to the state of $13,000. Any further questions? Representative, let me think, Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if Representative Hornstein can provide a time limit. I'm sorry if I'm coming late and at the inappropriate process, part of the process, but if Representative Hornstein might be able to elucidate the raising the limit from $10 million or the qualifier from $10 million to $25 million.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kalin, I think that's an appropriate question for the author who's here, and that's Representative Simon.
Representative Simon?
Thank you,
the author of the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kalin, good question. I have been working with MnDOT on this for the last couple of years, and I do want to thank Betsy Parker for that. And this was just the result of some negotiations. I wanted to make it practical and flexible, and this was an amount that they felt comfortable with as well. So this is just the result of our consensus.
Representative Kaelin, did you say million?
That's what I'm reading in the... Am I fair? Am I out of place here, Mr.
No,
Chair?
No, Mr. Chair. That's the size of the project rather than the...
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
A little confusing.
And I raise that question only, and I don't wish to be parochial on this committee, but it just that out of real... Just it's probably just happenstance that the most significant project currently in my district happens to be just below the $25 million, and we happen to be the eighth metro county in the seven county metro area. So just trying to figure out kind of how this relates. And I do think that by the time we get the actual reports on hand, the project will be completed. But
and Representative Kaelin,
I don't know.
By the time the reports come, the project value is going to increase. Any further questions from the committee?
Good one, Mr. Chair.
If not, thank you, Representative Simon. No further questions. We move. The motion's been made to adopt the subcommittee report on House File 667. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. House Files, the adoption has been... We accept... Wait a minute, I got to get the right word. The motion to adopt the report passed. Now,
Mr. Chairman, we have one more motion, and that's to direct this legislation to the full Finance Committee of the House of Representatives.
Representative Hornstein.
So I would move to do that. Pass to the full Finance Committee would be the motion.
You've heard the motion. Any question? If not, all in favor of passing House File 667 to the full Finance Committee, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no.
No.
The motion prevails. The next bill to be referred is House File 539, Representative Junkie's bill from Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I believe that Representative Junkie is not here with us today in committee. However, I would move a similar process. Members, this is a simple turnback bill related to the city of Wilmer and was not controversial in the subcommittee. And so we would then have, Mr. Chair, I would move the same series of motions. If members have questions, that are significant, I mean, we certainly, there is an option to hold this over or lay this over, but it would be my recommendation to do the same series of motions that we just did, moving a subcommittee report, adopting it, and then passing to the full Finance Committee.
Representative Hornstein moves the subcommittee report on House File 539, and actually that's a turn back route, and in essence, we have a fiscal note on that. Generally, there's not a fiscal note because that's a movement of trunk highway monies, well, not really trunk highway monies, but there's a turn back fund, and that takes the money out of the turn back fund and gives it to the county for that change from a trunk highway to a county route, county state aid highway. Any questions on the motion to accept the subcommittee report? Not all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary, no. The subcommittee report has been adopted. Representative Hornstein.
And then the next motion then would, we've moved it, and then I guess we have a motion to adopt it and then to pass it. So two more of these.
Okay, this is the second motion, ready? Is my head away? You have two.
Oh, good. Ready. All right. So then we're just down to one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, then I would move that we pass House File 539 and send it to the full Finance Committee.
You've heard the motion. Any questions? If not, all in favor of moving House File 539 to the full Finance Committee? Say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? No. The motion's adopted. So, Representative Hornsby, no, let's see, 1, 2, 3. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. There's still a subcommittee report.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the subcommittee report on... we're going with the Senate
House file?
House File 105?
Right, House File 105.
Okay.
Right, and then I'll be moving the substitutes after we adopt the subcommittee report.
Right, yes.
Because we did hear the House File Committee.
Right.
Excellent. Okay. Moving...
Chair? We're doing one motion at a time.
Right, though I understand that, but there is no House File 105 in our packet.
There's a reason for that.
There isn't.
Mr. Chair, maybe Representative Fortman may you want to comment on that?
Mr. Chair, after Representative Hornstein's motion to move the subcommittee report on House File 105, I'll be moving to substitute the Senate File 122 for House File 105, and we do have the Senate file in our packets.
Representative Holbrook?
Well, Mr. Chair, it would be nice to have the House file that was actually approved in the subcommittee in our packet for comparison purposes.
We can temporarily lay this over to the next meeting and see if it gets it in the packet.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's a very simple, small difference between the two that I could easily identify for Representative Holbrook.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
There's a very small difference between House File 105 and Senate File 122. At lines 2.10 and 2.11, the strike-through is the only thing that is different in the Senate file than the House file.
Representative Hartman, we can temporarily lay it over till the end of the meeting. We can have the pages make some copies of...
You've got 106, or you've got the other one?
Mm-hmm. That's okay. We'll just temporarily lay it over till the end of the meeting, kind of.
I'm fine. It is a small change, but I just think that as a matter of, you know, us being informed and being able to track all this from subcommittee to here and what's being moved and information, it would be helpful to have the information in our packets to be able to compare and see.
Any other objection? If not, we can continue. Any other committee members object? If not, thank you, Representative Holmberg. Representative Hornstein, you want to continue? What do we have?
We're going to move the adopt the subcommittee report for House File 105.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion's adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Our subcommittee report's been accepted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Just to Senate File 122, I may be wrong in this. Did this have a $25? Was it $25 on this on the House file?
I know, Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, the language is identical in all other respects.
Representative Stevenson, further questioning her?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I must be confused with another bill there. I thought there was one bill where we had 50 lined out and a 25 put in. That gets confusing.
Representative Horkman, can you comment on that?
Nope.
I don't recall any other bill that I've gone to.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Okay, we're to the position, I think, of adopting subcommittee reports.
We must be here. We already did.
Beg your pardon?
Did we go on?
Yeah.
Any question on the adoption of the subcommittee report? Not all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary, no. The report is adopted. Now, let's see. Okay. Representative Hortman, you're going to substitute?
Or yeah, would you like me to go up there? I also have an amendment. So I'll go to the table. Mr. Chair, I would move that the Transportation Finance Committee substitute Senate File 122 for House File 105.
Representative Hortman moves that to substitute Senate File 122 for House File 105. Representative Hartman, would you explain that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. There was a fiscal note prepared on this bill, and the fiscal note indicated over in the Senate and here that the federal highway funds of $800,000 that we were hoping to obtain by this bill can only be obtained if lines 2.10 and 2.11 are stricken. And so in the Senate, they made that change, and that's why I believe we should adopt that language here. Once we're working from the Senate file, then I'd like to add the amendment that Representative Holberg raised in our subcommittee so that our language will still be different than the Senate, but better.
Do we have extra copies? If we could just temporarily hold a minute, the pages are bringing down, they photocopied the fiscal report. If there's some questions in the meantime, we can represent Holbert.
Mr. Chair, I do have some questions on page 2, lines 9 through 11. And it's a little confusing because it's an exception and then we have an excluding on that line 11, so I think it tracks back. But I'm just going to lay out some situations and then you tell me if I understand this correctly or not. If you were a large family and had a tradition of every Christmas of renting a bus and driving around the Twin Cities to view Christmas decorations, which I've participated in many times, and given the fact that buses have no way of securing any type of child safety seats, would that practice, family tradition, no longer be available to somebody?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I'd like to defer to Gail Weinholzer on the question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, my name is Gail Weinholzer. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for AAA. It would not be a problem. Any vehicle that does not have a seatbelt to secure a child passenger restraint device would need not comply with this legislation.
And then where does it say that in the bill?
Ms. Weinholz? Weinholzer?
Yes. Let me see here.
Mr. Chair?
Representative King.
Might it be on line 1.9?
1.9, yes. Thank you, Representative Kalin. That's the language. Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, and thank you, Representative Kalin. That's where it does indicate that this booster seat requirement only applies to vehicles that have a factory-installed seatbelt.
All right, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Further questions? Not. Thank you, Ms. Weinholzer and Representative Hortman.
Did we want to wait for the fiscal note, or shall I move Representative Holberg's amendment at this point? I can tell you what the fiscal note said.
Why don't you review it temporarily? We have not that many copies, I guess. Representative Hartman, would you want to review it? The fiscal note?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear you. Would you like me to let you know what it said? Okay, it said that there was a positive impact of $5,000 estimated for the Child Safety Seat Fund. Based upon the existing law that applies to children under the age of 4, extrapolating the number of violations per year and the fines collected and the money deposited in the account, the Department of Finance came up with an estimate that there would be an additional $5,000 collected and placed in that account. The account where the money is placed for this type of violations is made available to people low income for obtaining a booster seat. So it's not money that goes back into law enforcement or the general fund. It's just strictly for helping more people get booster seats. So when we adopt, when we adopted the Senate language, we also added to our fiscal situation the possibility of receiving the $800,000 in federal funds that are available to states that have this type of law.
Any Representative Holker?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hartman, where does the $800,000 go on? Do we have, as a legislature, have any discretion in appropriating that to various areas?
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, no, we do not. The money that we would get from NHTSA would be specifically for making more booster seats available. There would be two different purposes that are identified that we could use the money for. One would be an awareness campaign, and the second would be helping to make those seats available.
And
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hartman, then are you anticipating that all that would go to the Department of Traffic Safety, or are you contemplating giving it to nonprofits to give away booster seats, or how do you view that $800,000 would be distributed for those purposes?
Representative Hartman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I understand the Department of Traffic Safety is here.
Hello, I'm Catherine Berkmer. I'm the Deputy Director of the Office of Traffic Safety in the Department of Public Safety. Thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative Holmberg, the NHTSA funding would come to the Office of Traffic Safety, and from there we would actually grant the money that would go to child, providing child seats to low-income families. Generally, we grant out already in the fines, already goes to public health agencies that do that. We would do the same thing generally with that. Public information in a lot of different ways, and also training of enforcement so that they know how to enforce the new law so that everybody's doing it correctly. So the money would come to us. We would grant it out to other agencies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any further questions from the committee?
Okay.
Representative Magnus.
I've got a question to the bill. When you mean, what do you mean by a motor vehicle?
Representative Hartman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, I would defer to counsel who I see is going for the statute books, but the definition of motor vehicle, I believe, does not apply to things like ATVs. I recall this from my days at the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources under Chairman Hackbarth.
Mr. Burris, could you comment further? Representative Magnus, I remember it's pretty clear in the statute.
We'll get it.
I'd like to be clear before I vote on the bill, Mr. Chairman, as my questions. We all don't live in the metropolitan area, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair?
Some of us live in the real world, you know.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Morgan.
It's my understanding that, again, this would only apply to vehicles with factory-installed seat belts, right? So maybe that, is that helpful to Representative Magnus in the nature of his question? I don't know.
Representative Morgan, we'll get a confirmation on that, and also from Mr. Burris.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, members, the definition of motor vehicle applies to all of Chapter 169, which handles traffic regulations and miscellaneous other things. And I'll read from part of that definition. Motor vehicle means every vehicle which is self-propelled and every vehicle which is propelled by electric power obtained from overhead trolley wires. Motor vehicle does not include an electric personal assistive mobility device or a vehicle moved solely by human power. That electric personal assistive mobility device is like a Segway. Actually, that's the whole definition.
Does that clarify your question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it clarifies some of the problems I've got with this bill. Because, Mr. Chairman, some of my tractors have got a factory-installed seatbelt on them that I farm with. And, Mr. Chairman, gosh, you know, and my kids bring their grandkids out to ride with Grandpa in the tractor. I can't cross the road with them the way it looks to this. Unless, I put child restraint system in that thing, then I'm not going to be able to get in the tractor for a kid that's 8 years old. That's one. My combine has one, and that's actually installed the seat belt in also. And then these larger ATVs that are kind of like the cross between an ATV and a pickup truck, they've got factory installed seat belts in. And fair cut, you know, if I'm across the road from my home farm or any of my farms, and the kids are out there with me working on the farm fields, I can't go across the road with them either. I don't know, what do I do? Walk them across the road and then go get the vehicle, or how do I do this? And
Mr. Chair.
And that's what I'm trying to figure out, what the vehicle meant and just what it means in real life, because I'm not a soccer mom hauling kids around into the...
Did you have a contact?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, Chapter 169.685, seatbelt language, passenger restraint system for children, which you don't have because it's not part of the bill that we're changing, Subdivision 1 indicates that the seatbelt requirements discussed in this section of Minnesota statutes apply to motor vehicles other than a bus, school bus, motorcycle, motorized bicycle, farm tractor, road tractor, and truck. So it does not apply to the farm tractor, road tractor, or trucks that you might be concerned about.
Mr. Chairman, but then it would apply to the ATVs then.
Mr. Chair.
You said earlier you didn't think it applied to, but it does apply to that then, right?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, line 1.8 of Senate File 122 indicates that every motor vehicle operator transporting a child on the streets and highway of this state. And my understanding is that those are not used on the streets and highways of this state.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Magnus,
they are licensed, and you go down the streets and highways of the state with them. Because we have licenses on them. We have to get down to the farm, you know, into the farmland with them. Got to check the cows, see if they're having calves or something, you know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the way that the statute currently exists that applies to children under four is what we're changing. And so, you know, if that's your interpretation of the statute, that you would need a booster seat for a kid under the age of four on your tractor, what we're doing is we're just bumping that age up to eight. We're not fundamentally changing the child restraint provision.
Again, Mr. Chairman, do you have a demonstration model of a passenger seat for somebody 8 years old? How big are those things?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, my understanding of the practice of this committee is that the Transportation Policy and Transit Subcommittee was where the more in-depth conversation of the content of the bill would occur, so that we could speed up the process here. And in the Transportation Policy and Transit Subcommittee, we had a demonstration of a child in a adult seat with an adult seatbelt on, and then the same child with the booster seat, and showing where the seatbelt would hit to demonstrate to members of the committee exactly the question you're asking of what is it that we're actually accomplishing here. And in the interest of time, I did not bring those witnesses here today because I thought we'd move a little bit more quickly.
Well, is it something I didn't... is it the same size as the ones we've got now, basically, or is it bigger? How do we do this?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the booster seat is quite a bit smaller than a car seat. As a parent, and I don't know if you're a grandparent yet, so maybe you've gone through these stages also, there's your infant car seat, there's your little kid car seat, and then you graduate to your booster seat, which is much, much smaller and much, much cheaper than either your infant seat or your toddler car seat.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then as I understand it, there will be these will be available to low-income families. Could you explain that a little bit? How they're going to be grants to low-income families? What's low-income mean?
Representative Hartman,
qualify for that, or
Representative Magnus and Representative Hartman, if you could just hold it a bit to the point of the seat belt. Representative Medora would like to engage in the conversation also.
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, there was a picture of it in the session weekly, the week that it was put in front of the Transit Subcommittee, so perhaps we could ask a page to go and get a copy of that session weekly to show you what that car seat looked like.
If we could do that. In the meantime, we could proceed with the questioning, too. What were was your question?
Well, my question, Mr. Chair, was what the low income grants. I wanted to know if farmers qualify for that too.
Representative Hartman, I believe you need another witness. I thought you covered that a little bit ago, but maybe not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, I will defer to Gail Weinholzer from AAA on how those grants are administered.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, just to give you a little bit of background information on the issue itself, the car seat that you're most familiar with, that's already mandated by state statute, averages in cost between $50 and $75. The booster seat that we're referring to as part of this statute averages between $13 and $15 at Walmart. By being making ourselves available to the $800,000 potentially available through NHTSA through passing this legislation, that money would be distributed to county public health organizations, and that we would be using whatever standards that they have established for that $800,000. Above and beyond that, AAA, the Minnesota Safety Council, and many other not-for-profit organizations already provide these car seats and booster seats free of charge to people who attend our clinics and car seat installation events all across the state.
Okay.
Dr.
Magnus.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Weinholzer. Any further questions? Representative Holbert?
Was there any discussion in the Senate about the taxis, and is it going to be the rider's responsibility to provide this, or is it each taxi's going to carry infant seats, booster seats, and toddler seats, or how is this going to work, and will any of that $800,000 be available to the taxi companies if they have to equip all their units with three different car seats?
Representative Holberg, I did not listen to the Senate debate, but I believe Gail Weinholzer did.
Ms. Weinholzer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, there was a minimal amount of discussion regarding the taxi and airport limo services providing a booster seat or car seat available to riders. We didn't have any testimony that would be any sort of inconvenience from those folks. A booster seat, again, being not much more than much bigger than the size of a Yellow Page, could certainly be easily stored in a vehicle. And I've never actually used a booster seat or car seat as part of a taxi service, but frequently when I travel with my mother's handicap, I always ask for a van that would accommodate her, and I think certainly a booster seat or a car seat is significantly less inconvenient.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ruth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, what do the taxis do now?
Representative Kalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking forward to getting on to Representative Pulaski and Representative Lesh's bills here in a second, but just because we're expanding the scope of who's covered, that we're extending another 4 years, I'm just curious if you could comment a little bit on how the 14 days period for coming into compliance is working currently, I appreciate that's the point of the is to have children transported safely. But if you could just talk really quickly about that 14-day period and just thinking about how busy folks are and if people are able to comply easily and what they do to comply, how they show that proof.
Actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Taylor, I'd like to defer that to the department. The one thing I would like to emphasize, though, before the department speaks to that is we did accept Representative Holberg's friendly amendment during the subcommittee meeting and changed the may be waived to must be waived. So we did as much as we could statutorily to make sure that this was a non-punitive law, but as far as the administration of it, I'll turn that over to the department.
Ms. Burke.
And members of the committee, Mr. Chair, Catherine Burkmore, Office of Traffic Safety, Department of Public Safety. Unlike citations where we actually have statistics, we don't have statistics of how many people take advantage of this because it doesn't go in a driving record. So what we would have would be anecdotal. The law enforcement officer, when he or she would stop someone, would actually, write a citation, usually give it to the individual and say, but if you can come into our agencies,
and show that you have purchased the booth receipt, we will that citation will go nowhere. So I don't know how many people are taking advantage of it. We don't have tons and tons of child passenger safety citations every year. And in fact, we see it going down every year. And I hope part of that is that more people are buckling their kids up through our education programs and through reserved seats. Also that those people that aren't are being educated with the ticket and complying by getting the seat and putting it in their car. So, again, I can't give you statistics, but it looks to me like it is being complied with. And also the fact that if this passes and we get the federal funding, which, by the way, could be anywhere from $124,000 to $800,000. It's a real complicated. But $124,000 for child seat would buy tons of child seats. But that's part of our education to law enforcement, to make sure they also remember this part. Because what we really want is compliance, not to cite people.
Great. Thank you.
Further questions? No. If not, we have the motion to substitute Senate File 122 for House File 105. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion passed. Representative Hortman, you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the S0122A1 amendment. Representative Hoberg raised the issue in subcommittee, and although the Senate was smart enough to add the other language we adopted in our subcommittee, they missed this one. And so Representative Hoberg raised the point that if we're changing the language here, in order to be consistent, we need to make sure that we change the basic seatbelt requirement language. And you can see that at line 1.11.
Representative Hoberg, is that the content of the amendment as if we have it now? Is that S0122A1?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd move that amendment at this time.
That's one.
Mr. Chair, this just makes sure that both sections of statute line up with each other with the age ranges. And when you change to say that kids up to age 8 have to be in a booster, then they no longer have to be in a seat belt. They have to be in a booster. So it's very technical in nature.
Representative Holberg, maybe do I understand you this is okay then?
It's great, Mr. Chair.
Great. Any further comment or question on the amendment? If not, all in favor of passage of amendment S0122A1, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. No. The amendment's passed. Now we have the
Mr. Chair.
Bill before us, and Representative Hortman renews her motion to pass Senate File 122 as amended to the full committee with a recommendation to refer to public safety and civil justice. Is that correct? No, that's where you wanted to go.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and we'll go see Representative Mallory.
Okay. Any questions about the motion? If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary, no.
No.
The motion's adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. The next bill up is House File 612 by Representative Pulowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House File...
Representative Pulowski, perhaps I should move the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The chair will move House File 6112 to lay over for possible inclusion in a transportation omnibus finance bill. Representative Pulowski.
Members of the committee, House File 612 is the semi-annual but often annual Port Authority bonding bill. And as you can see in your packet, except for a few years, we have either funded this through revenue bonds or general fund dollars. Mr. Chair, for those of us that have port authorities, this is a rather essential piece of legislation. Like almost all of our transportation needs, there's a backlog of improvements in our ports, and this legislation has been, for particularly my community, Winona, but for communities across the state, greatly needed. So with that, Mr. Chair, I do have with me Larry Lauder from the St. Paul Port Authority, who wants to speak to the bill. And if the members have any questions, I'd be happy to respond to it.
Ms. Lauder, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. My name is Lori Lauder. I'm the Director of Industrial Development for the St. Paul Port Authority. I wanted to say a few words again to the committee, and we certainly support Representative Blowski's bill. We think it's very important to continue to support the infrastructure in all of our ports. I'm going to focus today on the importance of the Port Development Assistance Program, particularly in terms of structural integrity of our ports, the dock walls, and so forth, that are so critical and without which we really can't operate. The St. Paul Port Authority has been able to accomplish a great deal through this program. It has helped, by the way, keep Minnesota competitive, and I think you'll see that as I go through a couple of quick examples from St. Paul and from my colleagues' cities. In St. Paul, we've rehabilitated warehouse roofs. We've repaired several areas of our dock walls. As I might have mentioned to this committee in the past, the structure, the structural integrity has been at issue here because these are very old structures, some dating back to the WPA projects of the 1930s. We've also dredged fleeting areas. We've upgraded a barge mooring site and addressed transportation access by rehabilitating railroad crossings and road access to our port facilities. An example or two from Red Wing. They've made essential improvements to their port infrastructure, specifically the relocation of cargo handling facilities as a result of this program. They were able to move their bulkhead for loading and unloading barges. They have dredged the channel to a new location. They've resurfaced the dock and storage area and upgraded the bulkhead. They have addressed generally hazardous traffic situations resulting in safer car truck travel in and out of the port facility. By relocating the loading facility to the south end of Red Wing, they have eliminated many truck trips through the heart of Red Wing. The community, therefore, has been made far safer and less congested thanks to this port relocation project, and it happened because of legislative support, and for that we thank you. A couple of words about Duluth. The Seaway Port Authority has made significant improvement as a result of this program. They have rehabilitated warehouse roofs. They have renovated dock walls, as we have in St. Paul. They've also done critical dredging and improvements of barge mooring sites and improved transportation access as well. In Winona, they were able to remove a sunken barge, which was disrupting movement of traffic to and from their commercial dock. They are also in the process of replacing barge mooring facilities, constructing new mooring cell, and rehabilitating their existing commercial dock wall. Winona also received port funds for a dredging project, which became part of a multimodal transportation improvement project for Winona. In general, Mr. Chairman and committee members, very little of this work could have been done without state financial participation. As you may know, the program provides up to 80% state financing for these projects, with each local port authority providing at least 20% of project funding. As we look to the future, we all have a backlog of projects that need to be done. These will allow for more efficient operations and continued low-cost transshipment of Minnesota commodities via our waterways. The members of our Ports Association assembled a list of our needed future projects in cooperation with staff from MnDOT, and these projects have a total cost, as of this date anyway, of about $6.5 million. In closing, I want to express my appreciation to all of you on the committee who have supported the ports facilities upgrading funding through this program in the past. We request that you support this bill. And the efficiency of transshipment of cargo, as you probably know, affects the entire state in a very positive way. There's a quote from one of my colleagues in Winona. Waterborne commerce uses less energy, causes less environmental degradation, generates less waste disposal, is responsible for fewer accidents, and creates the least societal disruption. And, for good measure, it's almost always cheaper. Mr. Chairman, I think these words say it all, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lauder. And for the members of the committee, although you touched on it, would you just identify the names of the cities that have ports for the committee, please?
Yes. The Minnesota Ports Association is comprised of Duluth, St. Paul, Winona, Red Wing, and Minneapolis, the water-based ports in the state of Minnesota.
Any questions? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just out of curiosity, I know this is a cash
from the general fund. I know that they're bonds in prior years. Tell me that they're not trunk highway bonds.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, to the best of my knowledge, these are not trunk highway bonds.
Ms. Lauder, and they never have been.
And they never have been.
Okay. Recollection. Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to figure out your process and procedures here. Can you explain to me why the previous bill that had trunk highway impact was referred to the Finance Committee, and now we have a bill that has general fund impact, and it's staying here for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Representative Holberg, probably because in past history this has been general fund, and I don't know the rationale behind, except that's the orders we have to pass the bills that way. I can sure check on it.
But, Mr. Chair, so are we saying that your big finance committee is going to make recommendations on trunk highway fund funding but not general fund funding? I don't understand that distinction.
No, I think we do in both the parts that trunk highway, general funds that we got in trunk highway, they would come under our jurisdiction. And this has been basically general fund in the past, as I remember.
And Mr. Chair, I think this is a great bill. The more stuff we can put on barges and keep off our roads, that's outstanding. I'm just from a process standpoint trying to sort out why we're sending bills that only have trunk highway impact to the Finance Committee and why we're keeping bills in the Transportation Committee that have general fund impact.
Representative Holberg, that's a question we've asked. And apparently, I don't know if the process has changed, but I'll check it again. And that's the orders have been given. Everything goes back to the Finance Division. Not our Finance, but the Finance Committee.
But
I'm sure check
Mr.
on it.
Chair, I'm sorry, but I heard you say that this was going to be laid over for possible inclusion.
That's correct.
So you were not sending this one to Finance. Is that correct?
I presume we could send it to the Capital Bond Committee, and sometimes I believe that's happened in the past. It's been in the Capital Bond Committee, and sometimes it stayed in this division, as I remember. Ms. Lauder, can you comment? I think generally, I know this committee has always handled it, but sometimes it may have ended up as far as a bill back into the capital investment. Maybe I could.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I don't know that information. Yeah. Perhaps Mr. Wally does.
If I could ask Representative Hausman, are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, my name is Kevin Wally, and I work with the Ports Association. This program has been funded at times with general obligation bond proceeds and at times with general fund appropriations. So there have been both sources have been used to capitalize the Port Development Assistance Program. And it has always been done initially through this committee. Sometimes when it's been a bond request, it then gets referred to the Capital Investment Committee. Otherwise, when it's a general fund appropriation, it's laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus transportation package.
Thank you. I guess perhaps that doesn't answer Representative Holberg's question, but we're going to have to find it out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Did you get any?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to take your I don't know as the answer this time. It just says it logically makes no sense to me that transportation has jurisdiction over trunk highway funds and that we send a bill out to finance that has trunk highway fiscal note. And now we have a bill that has a general fund fiscal note, and we don't send that to finance. It's not logical to me, but maybe at some point I'll understand.
And the only thing I can answer again, Representative Holberg, we do handle some general fund monies, as you are well aware, and I don't know, but we'll find out what the rationale is. Any further questions as far as the Port Authority bill? If not, the chair will lay this House File 612 over for possible inclusion in the transportation omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next bill up is House File 693 by Representative Lesh. You like Representative Lynch, the chair, will move House File 693.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. May I speak to the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, just briefly, I'm going to talk a little bit about this, and then I'll defer most of the comments and questioning to the gentleman sitting next to me, Travis Schwantes, who's a managing attorney in the 10th Judicial District out in Stillwater for public defenders. I am a prosecutor for the city of St. Paul, and many of the prosecutors and public defenders have similar concerns. It's often common up here for people to enact laws that remove privileges to drive in certain instances whereby your license is either suspended, canceled, or revoked, or canceled as inimical to public safety. A huge, huge section of cases that we deal with as misdemeanors and gross misdemeanors are these violations of driving privileges. People end up continuing to drive because they have to work or what have you. And it's a substantial burden on the court system. We find out in many cases that these individual defendants would like to have a valid license, but unfortunately the burden with the fines is just too much for them to get out from under the revoked status. And so I support this bill. The public defenders also support this bill as a way to reduce substantially some of our caseload through the criminal courts. And what it essentially does is allows us to allow certain defendants to pay back in yearly installments, defer some of the cost out further, and make them better able to reinstate their license. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would defer some comments and questioning to Mr. Schwantes.
Just excuse me, just a minute. For the members, it does have a fiscal note, and it's apparently pretty substantial, so you should look at your fiscal note. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Travis Schwantes. I am based out of the 10th Judicial District Public Defender's Office, which is based in Anoka. I manage an office in Stillwater, which is comprised of myself and 14 lawyers. In my work, I handle every type of public defender case that we handle, and a huge chunk of the cases that we handle on a daily basis are driving after suspension, driving after revocation, driving after cancellation type cases, because people are unable to reinstate their driver's license after they've been convicted of a DUI. I was in court this morning out in Stillwater on an arraignment case, an arraignment calendar, where there are 60 cases, and approximately half of them were driving after suspension, driving after revocation, driving after cancellation cases, and almost all of them ended getting kicked out another 3 months or so that the defendant would be able to get valid. The court system wants to have valid drivers, and a good number of those drivers were unable to get valid at their court appearance this morning because of the fee. During these cases, during these DUI cases that we handle, we handle probably the large majority of DUI cases in Washington County. Almost all my clients are low income or indigent. By the time somebody's done with a DUI case, if they're convicted, they've paid a fine of between $100 and $1,000 if it's a misdemeanor case. They've paid a surcharge and law library fees of $75. They've paid a probation fee of $100 to $200. They've paid a chemical use assessment to determine whether treatment would be appropriate. They've made 1 to 5 court appearances, all the while trying to figure out a way to get out to court at the courthouse in Stillwater. They don't have a license. They need to depend on friends and family. Then they're put on probation, and they're ordered to complete conditions of probation, usually treatment, usually outpatient treatment where meetings are any number of places throughout the county. What they're looking to do once they're done with their case is to get a valid driver's license. And I've represented hundreds of people over the last 9 years that have been a public defender that take so much pride when they get valid. I've represented a lot of people where time has just run out. The court isn't going to give them any more time to get valid. The $680 fee for most of my clients, if they're lucky, is at least one paycheck. If they get paid every other week, $680, making $30,000, $35,000 a year. Again, if they are lucky, if they have a good job, you know, that's what they're getting in one paycheck. After they pay for the rent, after they pay for food, they don't have much money left. As a result, because they don't have reliable transportation, because they're depending on people, friends and family, to get them to work, to get them to treatment, they either miss out on treatment, flunk out on treatment because they can't get there, or they miss out on their job, which, because again, they've already had to take time off for court, which obviously is their responsibility. Without reliable transportation, they lose their good job. They can't get to treatment. And I think that the result is that there's significant cost to the community, significant cost to the community in terms of failed treatment programs. We have somebody that is going to be driving again. They haven't successfully completed chemical dependency treatment because they can't get there. Even people that are motivated to get there, oftentimes, no matter what they try to do, they can't make it there. The significant cost to the community for somebody that's unemployed and the drag on society that that causes. I also think, again, just the significant cost to the court, the courthouse, the staffing, the time in processing these cases that Representative Lesh mentioned. When we talk about nearly half of the 60 cases on the calendar being bumped out for another 3 months with nothing much accomplished, I think that there is a cost to that that should be considered. I think the bill is a smart bill. It adds a fee for being able to get the installments. So actually, I think more money would be made down the line. And I just think it allows people to get on with their lives after they've already paid their cost. They've already done their jail time. They've already paid their fines. They've already paid their chemical use assessment, paid their probation fees. And the one thing left that they want to do is they want to be able to get on the road and driving with a valid driver's license. And it's really difficult to be able to do that without being able to have some allowance for paying on installments.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesh, have you talked to the brain injury folks about the reduction in the revenues that this bill has?
Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, no.
And Mr. Chair, I'm really concerned about that. Those people worked really hard for a number of years to get that revenue to support their traumatic brain injury. And as far as I can tell, in the fiscal note in 08, they're going to be down, $815,000. That's significant to their programs, and then moving in the out years. And I don't know if there's a way that you can structure this so that there would be maybe, in order to get on the payment plan, an initial, you know, get that $50 paid for with a down payment to the payment plan or whatever to keep those guys whole. Because, well, you know, big government, we can float some money around and do okay. I'm not so sure this nonprofit organization and the good work that they do could sustain that kind of hit.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Holberg, point well taken, and I think that's important. I actually think in addressing that, I'm not totally familiar with the science behind how fiscal notes are done, but I actually see in cases that there are probably some reinstatement fees that would be paid that otherwise wouldn't if we give them the opportunity for a payment plan, because a lot of people now they just check out. If it's an entire paycheck, they're not going to do it, and they're continuing to drive revoked. So that's a valid point and probably should be addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, and you also mentioned about people can't get to work or they can't get to their treatment or so, but are they using the public transportation or is there any encouragement for that or give them passes or something?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Ruth, I some people would say that you can't really do that in the Twin Cities too well. Public transportation, I know my folks, they're going out to the suburbs for their work or they're going over to Minneapolis and, you know, they have to spend 2 hours on the bus to do it. In other major metropolitan areas, it's easier to do, but I know what I hear from the defendants that I see in court, they say, forget about it, I need to find a way to drive. So I would also add, Mr. Chair, that, you know, one thing that's not taken into account, as was mentioned by Mr. Schwantes, with respect to the additional court time this requires, but in Ramsey County, I know we have bench guidelines where we start giving jail time after the second offense of this, of 10 days stacking, and that's a local impact that I think isn't accounted for in the fiscal note either. And I know it's shifting pots local to state, but it's not taken into consideration. It would probably be substantial cost savings if fewer people were driving with revoked license.
Representative Mason?
Can you just clarify where the fee is that you were talking about to do the quarterly payment?
Would you repeat the question, please?
I was just wondering where in the bill it shows the actual fee if they opt to do this quarterly payment.
Representative Lesh?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I'll probably defer to Mr. Schwantes to answer that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm looking at the bill, and I just saw that a handling charge may be imposed for each installment payment, and that's what I was discussing when I thought that there would be an additional amount collected. I'm sorry. It's line 3.10, the very last line of the bill.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Did we move the amendment?
You didn't have it.
Yeah. No.
You have an author's amendment, apparently. Is that correct?
We didn't
move the amendment.
Correct, Mr. Chair. I apologize. That just occurred, I think, this morning. Yes, we do.
Do you have a copy? Yeah. Do we have a copy of that? Do you have a copy of it, Representative Lesh?
Correct, Mr. Chair. I apologize. This was intended, I believe, to address the. It was an amendment suggested by DVS. All of our other driver's licenses expire on the birth date. The original language of the bill didn't provide for that, and they thought, couldn't you just please just.
If it's okay, I'll move the amendment H0693A1. Now you may explain it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this just makes the expiration of the license the same, treated the same as we do all the other licenses in Minnesota, whereas it expires on your birth date.
So basically, in your opinion, that's all we need, your short explanation. Representative Holbrook?
Well, Mr. Chair, the second half of the amendment allows for provisions if there's a second infraction and allowing them to go into a second round of payments. And I guess I would reluctantly support a payment plan on the first time when you're getting your life together, but to set up a scheme that if you have a second infraction and you haven't paid off the first one, you know, I think that's being pretty generous.
Representative Lesh, you want to comment?
Okay, may I have just a second, Mr. Chair? Representative Holbrook, that wasn't how I read it. As I understood this originally when I first looked at it, it was that a subsequent payment, you must pay the outstanding balance due for the initial reinstatement before you're subsequently reinstated. So you cannot, you have to pay the original fee. That's how I look at it.
But then if you go, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lesh, then explain to me from lines 1.9 through 1.12, where it talks about a payment of the outstanding balance for the initial reinstatement, a person may pay any new surcharge and fee imposed under paragraph B in installment payments as provided under paragraph F.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Holder, yep. I see what you're saying now. I understand that you may say that it is lenient in that context, how you're explaining it. I guess I may I have one moment, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, as I understand, this was language that was given to me by Driver and Vehicle Services, who has some problems with the bill and will probably testify against it, so perhaps...
Ms. McCormick is following behind you.
It's not the first time I've been stalled that day.
Ms. McCormick, have you seen the amendment?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Pat McCormick from Driver and Vehicle Services. I haven't seen the... I didn't know that you were given any language from our staff, so I've been in meetings all day, so I knew they were concerned about the way the fact that you talked about it could be upon issuance, and that was a concern because we renew on birth dates, as you know, and so our concern was that it would change our whole licensing system. But I didn't know there was anything else in there that would... I think this is already...
Ms. McCormick, if we could just a minute, Mr. Burris would comment.
Mr. Chair, members, part of this language came from Senator Lass's office, and that was both a function of concerns that he understood existed with the department, as well as clarifications intended to address how this process would work.
Chairman, this is
Representative Lash, any comment?
Mr. Chair, no.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the bill, page 3, line 3.4. Starting there, and it says if a person chooses to pay 25% of the total or basically go on installments, the driver's license must expire after 1 year. Is this amendment now talking about that as the reason for the license to be expired? And then you're looking at a reinstatement. Is that what the, does that help Representative Lash with this or to confuse it even worse?
Representative Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Magnus. It was my understanding that because this was submitted recently, I was working with the public defenders on this, and that I had thought that they had seen this amendment and could speak to it. It turns out that Mr. Schwantes has never seen this, and so I'm at a bit of a loss on this right now. I can't answer the question myself. If I had more time to review it, I might have a better chance at that, but right now I can't answer the question.
Representative Lynch. If I could just, if there are no further questions from the committee, we can pass it to the next committee without recommendation, unless there's a problem. Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Without agreement. Mr. Chair, could we divide the amendment and the part that is that the department wants, I think that would be 1.1 to 1.4 past that, and have them look into the rest of it, and if they want to
could
bring that
amendment, be up to the author if he wants to. I'd like to defer to the author. We could do it, certainly. Representative Lace, is that a...
I think that's a good idea, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move we divide the amendment. I believe the proper place, and Sister Burris could help me. Would that be between 1.4 and 1.5?
We do have a motion to divide the amendment. We'll discuss that. Representative Lynch, did you say you prefer that or not?
Yeah, I said, Mr. Chair, I think that's probably a good idea.
We could lay the bill over. Well, frankly, we wouldn't have a lot of bills in committee, and I'd just as soon not have another bill laid in committee. I'd just as soon pass it out without recommendation. But we have a motion before us to divide the amendment. I don't have the amendment in here. Would you reinstate the...
I believe the proper place, and Mr. Burris can help me, but I believe it divided the first half of the amendment would be 1.1 to 1.4, and the second half would be 1.5 to 1.12. Is that correct, or would that...
Mr. Burris, that
Mr. Chair members, yes, that's correct.
Representative Lesh, does that sound okay?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
You want to comment further on just to explain it again, Representative Nelson?
I move we divide the amendment and vote on the 1.1 to 1.4 first, and then vote on the 1.5 1.5 to 1.12 seconds.
May I ask a question? It's your intention to eliminate the second part?
Yes.
In the vote, you probably.
We could do it that way, too. We could just delete the second half.
That would be okay, too. That would be easier.
Why not change my motion and do that? We'll delete from 1.5 to 1.12.
Okay, discussion, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I serve on the committee that it's going to next, but so part of my interest is actually kind of expediting the process as a whole. And I'm just curious, it seems to me that the Representative Nelson and the author, it seems to me that lines 1.6 to 1.9 to the period are non-controversial, unless I'm missing something. And I'm just wondering I'm seeing that perhaps they are controversial.
I think that's what the problem is. Mr. Chair, I believe that's what the problem here is, that's what the controversial part of it, is the second half.
Mr. Representative Leish?
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Nelson was talking about this, well, Representative Kalin was talking about the second half of the second half, and rather than get into it, I think because there is some confusion about it, perhaps the best that as stated by Representative Nelson, that the entire portion of that entire paragraph just be stricken, and we can flesh it out later.
Representative Kalin, is that okay?
You can defer to the wisdom of my most senior colleagues.
Okay, we have a motion before us. Any further questions? If not, the motion is to delete or to divide the amendment.
No, delete this.
And delete the second half. And the first half was from line 1.1 through line 1.4. We'll just hold it for a second. Representative Nelson, any other comment?
No, my motion is to delete from 1.5 to 1.12 and
vote on the first half.
And then vote on the first half.
Any further questions? If not, all in favor of the motion to divide the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion passed. Now we have the House File 693 as amended before us. Any further comment?
Do we still have to vote on the first half?
Oh,
we can move the amendment.
That's right, we didn't vote on the first half. Did we? No.
Amendment is
so actually, we've moved it. So we'll vote on the first half. Any comment or questions on that first half? Not all in favor. Representative Hogan.
Mr. Chair, we can just go ahead and vote. I'm sorry.
Beg your pardon?
Go ahead and vote.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? No. The motion passes. The first half of the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hogan.
Given that these issues are the fiscal note is likely going to change, and because that this committee has jurisdiction over DVS, I'm assuming that it's going to PAMAR's committee, is that correct? Because of the DCA component of the fiscal note?
I didn't hear the original motion, Mr. Chair, but I believe that would make sense where it's going.
Is that Representative Mulgrew's committee? He's a subcommittee of PAMAR, is that correct? Or not subcommittee, but it'd be either one of the two committees that would go.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I'm thinking that this is probably going to have to come back to be part of an omnibus bill, given the financial implications for DVS. I mean, they're not going to be able to absorb these kinds of losses. I'm hoping that once all this gets worked out and we get a fiscal note that makes sense relative to the language, I'm thinking that it's probably going to have to come back here anyway.
Yeah, they don't have the funds in the other committee. No. Representative Lesh, does that seem reasonable to you?
Mr. Chair, yes, it does.
We could move it out we can still pass it too, I suppose, but it's going to come back. Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, if I would recommend we just move it without recommendation. The state
we had
the
to
state it is right now. Let the crime committee work on it as far as the policy, and then we're going to have to, I would believe or hope, that we get to work on the money issue later on in the session as we put together an omnibus bill.
Representative Kalin?
Just a parliamentary inquiry about what exactly the motion is. I believe that if Representative Mulley has requested to see the bill, it would go to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Policy Committee.
I don't know who requested the committee.
Isn't that right?
Unless I'm not here, but for the Public Safety and Civil Justice, and I don't know if that's chaired by Mulley or Paymar.
Are we going through the Policy Committee, Mr. Chair?
That was the motion then, apparently, to go to the policy, correct?
Mr. Chair, your researcher tells me that because it came from the Committee on Finance, it has to go back to the Committee on Finance before it can go to Mulley's.
It goes
committee.
To the full Finance Committee with recommendation. That's what maybe I didn't make it clear, but that's basically what it is, right? It goes back to the full, because they refer the bill back. So that's the motion we have before us, then, basically.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The Chair would then move that the to pass House File 693 with recommendations to refer to the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee.
As amended? Mr. Chair, as
right.
amended?
Beg your pardon? Or as amended, excuse me, right. As amended.
Aye.
Representative Medora? Representative Ortman, you made a question.
No, I'm just waiting to vote, that's all.
Any further questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, say no.
No.
The motion's adopted. Actually, the next meeting we have is the review of the MnDOT budget.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, this is really directed at members of the Transportation Policy and Transit Subcommittee. I had made a suggestion a little while back that people get their hearing requests in so we can start to process more bills before the deadline, and I think people have done that, and I've been told by our committee administrator we do have quite a large number of bills now before us, and I would like us to meet as scheduled originally in the afternoon next Wednesday, and then we'll catch a bus at a time to be determined for the evening hearing. I didn't want us to have to meet twice as a committee in the same day to give you some time off in the afternoon because we have the evening, but I think we're going to really want these 2 hours sometime in March, so back. So we'll meet next week as planned in the afternoon at 2:15, and then we'll reconvene in the evening. I apologize for that, but I think it's going to make things at least a bit easier on us in March. So I wanted to announce that, Mr. Chair, that we'll
thank you.
We'll have
and actually, for the members of the committee, in the last week or so, we've been receiving a lot of bills and requests for hearings, which we haven't had prior to this week. So with the committee deadlines, we can expect, if we're going to have slow committee meetings, we're going to expect Fridays or evening, and I can tell you that, if we're going to get the bill out of here. So we should be aware of that. And again, till the next meeting, when we have the budget review, the meeting's adjourned.